Back at it again. This is John St. Augustine on the Life 2.0 podcast. You don't know this, but I do. This is a total restart of an episode I was 20 minutes in, 20 minutes and 29 seconds in, actually. And all of a sudden, I got a message on my little Zoom recorder that said, card full, everything shut down, too much information, too much data was on this little tiny chip. This is actually the 30th episode of the Life 2.0 podcast. So there's 30 episodes on there that are in unedited form. Of course, I download it all into the computer. I edit it out and all that kind of thing. So I guess that was reaching the limit for file one. There's 12 files on here. So quite a lot of space, but I usually just work off one folder, I should say. It was the first folder. And it just totally shut me down and said, nah, that's enough of that crap. Started me thinking, number one is this used to really tick me off. Not that I use this machine particularly, but over the years I've had technical things jump up when I'm really on a roll and things are really coming out and all of a sudden, that's the end of that. So I don't get as miffed as I used to because it's part of the drill. And I'm saying, well, whatever that 20 minutes and 29 seconds was, gone into the great Valhalla of Audio Vault and never to be heard from again. So I cleared everything off, took about 15 minutes. And in that 15 minutes, I thought, A, about the things I was already talking about that you'll hear. Some of it, not all of it. B, I thought about these metaphors that we have now brought into our lives when it comes down to our computers and our technical devices and our ELS, our electronic life support system that we carry around on our phone. And these little SIM cards that are in there can hold all this data except when it can't. The comparisons to me jumped forward real quick. So this little card is full of information. It can't take it anymore. And I know how that feels. And I'm sure you do too at some point. The constant dumpster diving into the internet landfill of Facebook will do that to you in about 9 minutes. I do everything I can to add not garbage in there, but some things that are worthwhile that are layered in among everything else. And so I do everything I can to make sure my card doesn't get too full. My computer, however, is another matter. I have this thing on here called Super Anti-Spyware Edition. And I run this thing, sometimes it runs by itself, but I run this thing probably every other day. And what it does is goes through and deletes files and things that shouldn't be on there and all kind of malware and garbage that somehow gets sucked up and pulled along every time I turn on the computer. Because everything's being tracked, everything's looked at, it's like a magnet. Right? So you click one thing. If I look at, I don't know, shelving units at Home Depot, I get 19,000, you know, connections to this stuff automatically. It just happens in the blink of an eye. Don't need all that stuff. So it clogs up the system. So I run this super anti-spyware deal. And after about 4, 5, 6, 8 minutes, it shows me all the files that need to go. Sometimes it's a couple hundred. I think that at the top was about 1,300. You know, it was all these just junk. And so that cleans it out. That's one level of it. And then I start looking at the hard drive and deleting history. And how many times would you want to delete your history over a lifetime? I mean, I'll be 60 in December. And for the most part, I bet 80% of my history, I'm pretty good with that. The other 20%, like delete, delete, get rid of that, delete. And then I have to reboot the computer. I have to start it over. I can do a restart. And I think that's just another metaphor that popped into my head as I was waiting for these files to clean off that, you know, if we're lucky to be here tomorrow, it's a restart. If we're lucky to be here the day after that, it's a restart. And sometimes you have to do a restart during the day when it gets to be too much, when your card gets a little too jammed up and full and it can't take any more information. So we're about 4.5 minutes in. The machine hasn't shut down. I think I'm okay. I will continue on. So now you know the backstory. You know the rest of the story of the glamorous world of podcasting on this little Zoom machine that I have. What I was talking about in the first iteration of this podcast was a visit I had yesterday to my friend Eric Soderholm's place called Solder World, which is near Chicago. It was Eric's 70th birthday, and he was doing an event, an invite event, where he was talking about the spiritual lessons of baseball, of which he is very familiar. He played for the Texas Rangers, the Chicago White Sox. He played for the New York Yankees. I think I'm missing somebody. Not really. Oh, and the Minnesota Twins. He was drafted actually by the Minnesota Twins. So Eric had a pretty good career in a space of pro sports, which is notoriously short for most people. And he had a good long career. And at one point, he hurt his knee and he went in for rehab. And back then, he was approached by a guy named Arthur Jones, who invented Nautilus machines. If you're an exercise person, you know what I'm talking about. And for a while, Nautilus was the thing. And to this day, I wish I had a couple of the Nautilus machines that I at my gym, because the range of motion, what was really what it was all about, this setup almost like the Nautilus, the animal, the Nautilus, the aquatic animal, and the animal that has been around for, you know, like 40 million years. It has that, you know, reticulating circular thing going on. And he built these machines with full range of motion capability. And you can't do that with free weights. It's too hard on the joints. So anyway, Eric was approached to be rehabbed on Nautilus. And if it worked out, then he would become a spokesperson for it for free. And he's like, sure, let's try it. So it was, to his amazement, an incredible transformation. He had all his full range of motion. He worked with a guy who's a legend in training and athletic training called Dr. Ellington Darden, who's all about full range of motion and so much of this stuff. Now, this is in the 70s. I didn't start hitting the Nautilus stuff till the 80s. And it was a big deal then. I still think the concept holds up. So anyway, Eric totally transformed his body. He turned into, you know, like a mini Hulk kind of guy. He came back from that knee surgery, which may have ended most careers, but he had worked around that. He was the Major League Baseball Comeback Player of the Year. And he got a huge raise, and, you know, it was a big deal, and all this fame was heaped on him, and everybody wanted to hang out with Eric Soderholm. And I remember him from the Chicago White Sox, just a slugging third baseman, just an incredible guy. And that all came about, and then he got lazy again. He kind of said, fame went to his head, and he started doing the fried chicken circuit. When you go out speaking for low fee, no fee, and people want to hear what you have to say, they don't have any money to pay you, so they feed you. And anybody who's been a speaker over time knows what that feels like. I don't do that stuff anymore, but it is kind of a rite of passage. So he gained weight, and he got lazy, and he finds himself 2 weeks before the season way out of shape after he was the comeback player of the year. So he goes into the season, and he's playing horribly. So he gets about three-quarters of the way into the season, and you know, he's just not performing, and it's on the downside. You know, he's making headlines. What's wrong with this guy? He was a comeback player of the year, blah, blah, blah. And so apparently at one point, the vaunted late, great Jimmy Pearsall, who is a legend in baseball circles, he had some psychological problems along the way. He was a broadcaster for the White Sox for quite a long time. Colorful guy, to say the least. And Eric had a terrible day at the plate. And Pearsall says on the air that, you know, he could be faster than Eric was. And by this time, Pearsall's 50, 55 years old. Soderholm's probably still in his 30s. So the next, he didn't hear that, of course, he was playing, but he said he got home and there's all these voicemails on his voice machine of what Pearsall said about him. So the next day at practice, before the game, batting practice, Pearsall's hanging around the batting cage and Eric walks up. He's like, Jimmy, what's the deal? You're a pro ball player. You don't bark on somebody else. And he said, you're slow, you're slowing down, you're lazy, you're dogging it. I'm faster than you are. And this went back and forth for quite a bit, these two guys bumping chests and whatever. And finally, Eric says, there's absolutely no way that you could, you know, that you're faster than me. And Pearsall says, I'm faster than you, and I can prove it. And Eric says, well, listen, I'll race you. I'll bet you $100 that I'm faster than you. And then Pearsall says, how about $1,000? $1,000 that I'm faster than you are. And this young guy who was the comeback player of the year is not going to let that go by. And he says, okay, out to the outfield running. He goes, no. He says, we're going to get a stopwatch. We'll be timed going from first all the way to home. And Eric's like, you're on. So tomorrow before the game, we race $1,000. And that was it. So the reporters on the sideline heard all this going on. And of course, this was, you know, grist for the fodder mill, and it made the papers. It made headlines in Chicago. Next day, he comes back to go to the, you know, get ready for the game. Before they could even get started, there's a note on Soderholm's locker by Bill Veeck, who was the owner of the White Sox at the time. And believe me, this is leading to a point, the reason he was doing this spiritual lessons from baseball. So hang in there with me. So this wager's made, $1,000, who's fastest from first to home? Pearsall's 50, 55 years old. Soderholm's 30, 34 years old, somewhere in there. And, you know, just coming off Player of the Year award as a comeback player. He goes up to Bill Veeck's office, who was an extremely colorful character, and he walks in. He says, "Hello, Mr. Veeck." He says, "Sit down, Eric." And he said, Soderholm says, "Does this have something to do with the race with Pearsall?" And Veeck says, "Yes." "It's not going to happen." He said, "But Mr. And I'm fat." And he cuts him off. He says, "I'm faster." "No, it doesn't matter. I cut him off." He goes, "Number one, you know, if you beat him, he will chew on this all season. He'll chew on it. He'll be like, yeah, he, you know, it was a fluke. It was this and that. So there's no good publicity comes out of that. If by some chance he beats you, he will run with this until the day he dies. You'll be the laughingstock. You'll be the goat. It's not going to happen. Number three, if you get hurt again, then you're costing me money. So this is not going to happen." So he started to see a little bit different perspective outside of his ego. Not a good idea. Okay, fine. So they put a kibosh on that. But Soderholm was burning inside. He couldn't believe that, you know, that this guy challenged him, and he couldn't do anything about it. So about, I don't know, he says, like, you know, after the season, you know, he finished fairly strong, but later after the season, he gets a phone call to play soccer for some kids that had disabilities. And he says, "I'm a sucker for, you know, going to help kids out. There's nothing wrong with that." And so he goes to this soccer game, and he sees all the celebrities there, and who by chance is the goalie for the opposite team but Jimmy Pearsall? He says, "The universe set this up perfectly. I was be able to get my revenge on this guy. And I knew at some point during this celebrity soccer game that the ball was going to get to me. I was going to tee it up, and I was going to cram this down his throat. Revenge was mine." And sure enough, the game goes along, and they're running around doing their thing. And at some point during the game, absolutely perfect pass. Soderholm's running right towards the goal. The ball gets right in front of him. He said Pearsall had this "oh shit" look on his face. And Soderholm tees the thing up, and he goes to kick it. His foot rolls off the top of the soccer ball. He tears his ACL in his knee. And that was the end of his baseball career. And as he was telling this, he was very emotional. And he said he started to realize at that point that the consciousness that he'd been living in his life, the perspective of how he saw life as an athlete, and nothing inherently wrong with that, was starting to shift. And that all he did was plot revenge on a guy who challenged him. And it literally cost him his baseball career. He said they couldn't fix ACLs like they do now. And he was done. Baseball career over. Because of revenge. So my buddy Phil and I were at this event with Eric yesterday, and he told a lot of different stories around all these things. And it got me thinking about perception and perspective and letting things go. And that was really the thrust of this 29 minutes and 29 seconds that you didn't hear. You just heard a little snippet of it now. And isn't that the way of all things? We live in a day and age when we are constantly bombarded with challenge and wanting to get back and revenge and all the stuff that goes on, especially in unsocial media, mostly from people we don't even know who just disagree with us. And there is something within each human. I have it. I mean, look, I played years of semi-pro football and college football and high school football. And sometimes my consciousness back then, I just wanted to destroy the person across me, even if I knew him. Didn't matter. Now we're on the field, it was like legalized mayhem. All came out of the anger that I had for a lot of different things in life, and that was my way of channeling that out. Trying to impart on someone else always comes back and bites us in our own ass. And that's, I think, what Eric was getting at. And so these days, when it's so easy to get angry, all it takes is a word. All it takes is a meme. You know, somebody puts something up. Listen, I have worked diligently to stop being the internet cop. I find it fascinating that people can take something they didn't research, that's totally fabricated, not even close to being true, and put it out as if it is. And then people, yeah, that's true. It isn't true. And those things really make me angry. And like Bill Bixby used to say in The Hulk, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry. So I try to channel and funnel some of this into some sort of perspective shift for people. And in all of these episodes, I try to find some continuity that I'm challenging, not just you listening, but also myself doing this. I've done so much radio over the years, so many interviews, I lost count, except for the 30 of these. And I try to come up with a different perspective or approach or leverage on myself even, so I grow along in the process. I don't just go along, I grow along, because I got work to do too. So you look at all these things that are going on, and I found this, Psychology Today is just a great magazine, and it talked about the concept of denial. How, here's a perfect example. Someone I kind of only know by name in the great landfill of Facebook put up this post yesterday, and it was a picture, supposedly, of Barack Obama's student ID card in Honolulu, okay? And had like a young picture of him, and it was an ID card and his date of birth and all that. And on the bottom, it said foreign student. And at least 100 people were like, yeah, see, this is all, you know, it's all set up. And it's not true. It's not true. There's a dozen sites. I'm not going to name them, because if I name a site, somebody says, see, you're slanted. I'm not slanted. I just think the truth's important in some things, in everything, if at all possible, and it should be. And I saw this, and I just started laughing. And it's like this blind spot that people have when all we want to do is have our bias confirmed, something I beat the drum on all the time. And so doing this podcast, my hope is that in some way, shape, or form, that information can lead to transformation, but it takes effort, and it takes a shift in consciousness. Sometimes it's getting your ACL torn and your end of your career to go, that's probably not a good idea. Humans, for some reason, don't learn real well without pain. That is one. If there was two huge lessons, two ahas that I get in my lifetime, the first one is that expectation and reality never line up. Just wait. Here we go again. Here in the state of Illinois, the governor's race is on. And the political ads are at least 80% bullshit. But they run those ads because they know people won't check on it, just like Facebook, and they'll go, yep, that's true, because he's a Republican. Yep, that's true, he's a Democrat. Yep, that's true, fill in the blank. That's why they run those ads, because they work, because people don't think. And they know that. They spend millions. The two guys running for office here have spent like millions of dollars, millions and millions and millions and millions and millions, that most people would never see in their lifetime earning, just to become the governor of the state of Illinois, which is not a job I don't think I'd want. Certainly not spending millions to get it. And the ads that are run are so ridiculous, but they're effective to a certain population, the population that would rather just react than respond. So expectation of what a politician tells us, whether it's the current president of the United States or a former president, or these guys running for office as governor, the expectation is, well, they can do everything they say they can do. No, they can't. There's checks and balances. There's all kind of crap that goes into this. You know this. It doesn't ever turn out that way. So expectation and reality never line up. And pain, which is the second thing I've learned in life most, is directly connected to expectation. And the higher your expectations about how things should be, how people should be, how it should all be, when those expectations go unfulfilled, it's very painful. And expectation is this, it's not hope. Expectation is an endless longing. It's an endless longing that never, for the most part, is fulfilled. The book Great Expectations aside, life, I've learned, is better served and lived by lowering my expectations of everybody else but myself, even the people that I'm closest to, that I care the most about. When I lower my expectations on everybody else except me, life gets a whole hell of a lot smoother. Consequently, the more I stay in the reality of a situation, as difficult as it is, as challenging as it is, as hard as it is, the less pain I experience. Because you're in it. You're not expecting it or someone else to be different than they are. I'm fascinated by that. And the Psychology Today issue that I read had a great line. Reality always wins. Real reality, not reality shows that are produced for television that people think are real. I'm talking about reality, the reality we live in our lives that is going on when no one else is here or when we're by ourselves or in our thoughts and the experiences we have. Reality always beats denial. You can deny shit for years. It will get you. I've had it. You've had it. You can't outrun it. And the more we try to outrun the more pain we endure. It's like compound interest of the absolute frickin' worst kind. And so I took a couple classes in psychology. Yeah, that was fascinating to me. And it's still fascinating to me. I watch things happen in the news and the names and the faces change, but the lessons are always the same. And that's because history repeats itself because we repeat ourselves, whether it's personally, professionally, on the micro or the macro. That's what the evolution is all about. As I said a little bit earlier, it might have been in this clip or the one before that you didn't hear, and I'm going to say it again. I think so much of this comes out of the fact that we should have figured some more things out by now, not just how to pay $500 for a phone we don't really need. Maybe we should be further down the line. That's expectation, measured expectation. It's certainly not the Wild Wild West anymore, and it's not the 1920s where people are being gunned down in the streets of Chicago, but they're still being gunned down just for different reasons. So it's been going on since there have been two people and one didn't like the other. And we say, I don't like you. You're different than me. And they knock the shit out of them. And this stuff fascinates me. So what Eric's talk was about yesterday, and Phil and I sat and listened with about 48 or 50 other people, was about that shift in consciousness. That if you always do what you've always done, you will always get what you've always got. That is just the bottom line. However, even knowing that's not enough. Getting yourself to take action when you usually don't, or stop taking action when you usually do, that is, in my opinion, observation and experience, what evolution is about within your own space, within your own lifetime. I am not a big fan at all of the concept of, quote, life coaching. I see these ads all the time. It just torques my last bolt. Hey, kids. Earn extra money, become a life coach, get a certification, put it on your wall, tell other people what to do, even though your life may be a bucket of shit. I don't get it, but it sells. Authenticity, hard work, undoing what's been done, sticking your nose in places that most people won't go so you become a better human being, not just a human doing, that takes work. That's not a bumper sticker or a billboard or some sort of quote-throwing motivational person. It's in the hard, difficult, challenging, just up against the shit wall of life where change can take place. If you notice, it's easy when it's easy. When life's going along and you got enough money in the bank and the bills are paid, nobody's calling to bug you and everything's flowing along, that's not when change occurs. That's when you enjoy what you've changed and who you've become. It's when the shit hits the fan and you're in front of the fan and not behind it. That's when the opportunity comes to look at yourself and look at what's going on to see if change is in order. And it usually is. So what I got most out of yesterday's talk with Eric and listening to him speak and the emotion that came through him and the amazing transformation, this guy was a high-level baseball player. At one point, his biggest thing was to see how much money he could put in the bank. There's nothing inherently wrong with that. But now he runs this wellness center with a Garden of Eden behind it. And there's a place for massages and the aqua table and crystals and things. And he kind of just floats through the place. And people are attracted to it like filings to a magnet. And they just show up there because now he's in line with his purpose. He was in line with playing baseball, which he admits readily was really a platform for him to become who he is now. Most people stop where they're at. They don't go past that. And so he had the wherewithal, and he paid attention to the signs, and he did the work that needed to be done, all of it across the board. And all of a sudden, at 70, here's this guy who is nowhere near who he used to be at 35, when Jimmy Pearsall was challenging him to run around the bases for $1,000. That's evolution. And I think we should all take stock of that, just like this little card on the Zoom machine that was so full it couldn't take any more information. And you got to be careful with the information that gets downloaded. It's just critical. It is critical because there's almost nowhere to hide. I talked in the, I keep referring to this ghost clip that you never heard, but for 3.5 years when I worked at Oprah Radio, as Dr. Oz's producer, Gene Chatsky's producer, creating all this content for arguably the most well-known human being on the planet, Oprah Winfrey, I had this thing on my hip they call a BlackBerry. I called it a blueberry only because I don't like BlackBerries. However, I had this blueberry on my hip. And when I got the thing, I was not used to it buzzing, and it did about every 90 seconds. And what happened was the way the setting was on that machine, this little thing on my hip, I was getting all the emails about everything from everybody, like 400 people. It was constantly going through. So I had to change the settings. I had to change the settings on the BlueBerry. So I only got things that were related to radio, and it calmed down a little bit and calmed down a little bit more. And then it was only the things that I needed to know, not all the stuff I didn't need to know. And interesting to me, after I got rid of the BlackBerry / BlueBerry, at least for 2 weeks, if not three, my hip would have these phantom buzzings. It was so used to that happening. It was like a response. It was like Pavlov's dogs. I got this response on my hip. And it was fascinating, fascinating. So all these things are going on. Our technology, of course, far surpasses our humanity. That's obvious. But that doesn't mean that there aren't great things going on in the world. My homepage, away from Facebook, is the Good News Network. And all it is the stuff that's going on in the world that's good, that uplifting. It makes you feel good. I feel better about it. And I start my morning with that. I go through 6 or 8 things before I jump over and, you know, I take a dive into the virtual landfill of Facebook and all this shit you got to pick through and weird stuff and what the hell. And it's just, you got to have that balance. Otherwise, your card gets full. Everything shuts down. You got to do a reboot. You got to delete your history. You got to start all over again. And there's nothing wrong with that either, because that's in so many ways what life is about as well. I wanted to bring up the fact that, you know, the Earth Matters program, the Earth Matters radio program I did for 3.5 years with Bill Curtis, is probably some of the best work I've ever done, we've ever done together. You know, the guy could read the Chinese menu and it would sound great. So, hello, I'm Bill Curtis. So that's a given. But the research that I did for all those years really is a combination of 20-some years of research on environmental things and all that goes on. And if there was a place where denial was more embedded, I don't know where it would be outside of getting called on running a red light or a stop sign and going, no, I didn't do that, even though it's on film. It comes to the environment. And I'm not sure where that is, what the gene is, what the muscle is, what the denial DNA is, where we are part of this biosphere that literally keeps us alive, that billions of creatures have come and gone, and we think we're not going to go the way of the dinosaur when we're fouling our own environment on so many levels you can't even keep count. And I find it so amazing, fascinating, and sad at the same time that we have these opportunities disguised as liabilities when it comes to the environment. And yet there's a section of society, mostly because driven by greed or profit or what have you, that, you know, wants nothing to do with it. And so I found this, I have 300 of these Earth Matters clips. They're all a minute long, you know, because people's attention spans are long gone. I came across this specific one that's about, let's see, so this is 2018. This is probably from 2014. And it talks about the emissions on coal plants, because they wanted to clean up the air, because, you know, it ain't good. That's why they have black lung disease in the coal mines. That's why they had a canary down there, because if the canary in the coal mine died, you're up shit creek. And so we have all these examples, in my opinion, observation, and definite experience on the planet of all this stuff happening. The canary in the coal mine is now out, and it's all these different things. It's the increase in tornadoes and hurricanes and the severity of those things and weather that we've not seen ever, you know, and it's being hit in places that aren't just, you know, some third world country. So when the Carolinas are battered beyond belief and, you know, you lose 100 people, and when the waters recede, the streets are littered with dead fish, that's never happened before. No big deal. We'll go back to the football game. It is a big deal. But we got this DNA muscle thing going that we say, no, somebody else will take care of it. Apathy, maybe, is part of denial, that somebody somewhere is working on it, somebody somewhere will fix it, somebody will get a switch and they'll flip it and everything will be all better. It doesn't work that way. We're past those days. So this clip that I wrote and Bill delivered is from 2014. I just confirmed it. Now, 4 years later, listening to what's going on in the world, as the current president promised that coal would come back and clean coal was the way to go, and it's not, and it's all BS. It hasn't come back. He's promised all those miners that their jobs and careers would be a resurgence, and 2 years in, nothing's happened because it's all bullshit. It goes back to what I said before about expectation. If I feed you enough expectation, you will like me, you will vote for me, you will support me. But the reality is, can't deliver. That's been going on forever. Could because we fall for it every single time. So listen to this clip from 2014. I got a couple thoughts on the other side. This is Earth Matters number 184 with Bill Curtis.
The biggest challenge humanity faces is climate change. Are we morally obligated to do something about it? The EPA recently proposed a regulation that would slash carbon emissions up to 30% from existing coal plants by the year 2030, taking aim at the biggest man-made contributions to greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide emissions. The announcement was made by EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy, who stated, "For the sake of our family's health and our kids' futures, we have a moral obligation to act on climate." The regulation suggests that states make advances towards shifting from coal to natural gas, renewable energy, and power plant upgrades. The rule represents one of the most significant steps the federal government has taken to curb emissions. However, there is little doubt that the moral stance taken by the EPA will end up in a court battle as the coal lobby pushes back. While humans debate, the planet continues to heat up. I'm Bill Curtis, and Earth Matters.
And that's the way that rolls out. Here's the big kicker for me. The National Coal Museum in Kentucky, which celebrates coal and the history of coal and how coal built this nation, and it did at a very high cost, is run by solar power. Go look it up. You don't believe me? You think I'm on a political thing? Go look it up. The National Coal Museum made a decision that the best way to save energy at the coal museum was to put solar panels in. Ladies and gentlemen, I rest my frickin' case. Anyway, this has just been a little bit of a short outing for me. I appreciate it. We're about 30 minutes in, and the last couple minutes I just want to spend here saying thanks. This is the 30th episode. When I started this back in like March, somewhere in there, April, I'm not really sure, there was some urgings from a lot of different people to do something. And it was a reminder to me to do what I do best, what I'm here to do. Whether there's, you know, I think we're coming up to about 1,100 downloads, listens, and that's a good thing. It's a far cry from 3 million people listening to me on Oprah Radio, but it's, if I don't show up for 1,100, then I shouldn't show up at all. And so on this rainy, dreary kind of early fall day in Chicago, I'm recalling some of the lessons and things I've learned in the last 24, 48 hours and sharing those with you in a way I hope that makes some sense and that you can have some takeaways from this stuff. But to the subscribers, first and foremost, the people that pay $20 a month, that's $5 a week, that's 66 cents a day. I sound like a PBS pledge here, but it's the way it is. And I'm so respectful of that. You know, I come from radio, which is all driven by revenue. Radio is driven by revenue. So when you turn on, quote, free radio, AM, FM, it's not free. It's paid for by somebody, sponsors, what have you, commercials. And if you got to sit through one more 1-800-CARS-FOR-KIDS commercial, you know what I'm talking about. So all that money has to come from somewhere. It just doesn't come from the listeners. But you pay by sitting through commercials or zipping through the dial so you can avoid them. So there's no commercials here. It's just straight up Johnny, for better or for worse, because people, subscribers, are plunking down $20 a month, and I deeply appreciate that. I started a long, long time ago with, I think, about 6 people listening and 3 related to me. And so while I've had this roller coaster ride up and down, I am even more and more appreciative of people who find value in what I do, and they're willing to plunk that down and support that. And I know that the listening habits are different than when I was on WGN or Oprah Radio. It's not a pointed listening anymore. I have people sending me notes saying, well, I just binge listened to you for like a whole day, 7 hours straight. Jesus, Mary and Joseph, I couldn't listen to me for 7 hours straight. So thank you for doing that. So that the subscribers, thank you so much for that. And you're the only ones hearing this, by the way. I'm doing these, you know, the Freebie Friday pops up. Those are bonus episodes for you as a subscriber. I try to do 4 to 6 of these a month, as you already know. And the idea is that if other people hear it, they will join in and be part of what we're doing here, and that's all good, and we'll see where it goes. It's still a learning curve for me, so I really, really appreciate it. And the other thing is, kind of like if the takeaway of the day, what is that for me? It's the reminder that when you change the way you look at things, as Wayne Dyer said, the things you look at change. And staying out of the things. Don't get your card too full. Don't get backed up too much. It's okay to turn off the computer for a while. Even though we have these deep, visceral, emotional connections to what's going on in Facebook particularly, there's billions of people. I'm in there in and out all the time. I mean, I get it, but it's how you pace yourself, I think. And I've learned that over time. I'm not going to debate people who don't agree with me because it comes to nothing. It's a grind in my gears. I don't have time for it. And so I've really pulled out of that. The lesson of discernment is not easy, especially when you've been in the media as long as I have and you've earned a living kind of with your opinions. That doesn't happen there. And it's not going to happen there. And it reminds me of that, what I say all the time. You know, you squeeze an orange, you get orange juice. Squeeze tomatoes, you get tomato juice. Squeeze humans, all kind of shit comes out. Maybe it's best we don't get squeezed all the time. Life is very short. If you're lucky, you get just over 27,000 days to be alive. I've never seen Democrat, Republican, or Independent on a headstone. How we spend our time between now and the time we leave here, our shelf life is up, our expiration date comes around, whatever that may be, that's precious stuff. At least it is for me, and I often forget that. And so when I get notes from people who have found value in what I do, it reminds me that that I'm using my time well and wisely. Until next time, safe travels. Adios.